Controller Ursula Rudenberg, URSULA, at Pacifica.org. I'm your producer and host, Dori Smith. See you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM or freakradio.org, it's our old favorite, or at least mine, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, Civil Rights in Santa Cruz. You got them, we want to find them, and share them. Stay tuned.
Tell me who, who's the criminal here? Tell me who, who's the criminal here? If you have to leave your land, but you meet your match on the burning sand, and someone lends a helping hand, who's the criminal here? Tell me who, who's the criminal here? Tell me who, who's the criminal here? Borderman can't let you through, what's a poor man gonna do? Businessman's got work for you, who's the criminal here? Tell me who, who's the criminal here? Tell me who, who's the criminal here? Framing laws or aiming guns keeps you down and on the run, but how will you feed your little ones? Who's the criminal here? Tell me who, who's the criminal here? Tell me who, who's the criminal here? Your skin may be red or brown, or black and blue on white man's ground, with your head pierced with a thorny crown, who's the criminal here? Tell me who, who's the criminal here? Tell me who, who's the criminal here? I know how fear can leave you blind, to the hopeful heart, the open mind, but to make a crime out of being kind, who's the criminal here? Tell me who, who's the criminal here? Tell me who, who's the criminal here? Shut your eyes and turn away, shut your mouth, nothing to say. But if someone dies in our desert today, who's the criminal here? Dime quién es el criminal. Dime quién es el criminal.
That was Ann Feeney from If I Can't Dance, and of course the name of that is Who's the Criminal Here? Hey, all you criminals can call in. Phone number here is 831-427-3772. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, broadcasting to you from Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM in Santa Cruz. And we're also streaming at, of course, freakradio.org. The show will be archived, for those of you who are so interested, at huffsantacruz.org, huffsantacruz.org. So with all that information under your belt, now's the time to write down the number of the station or make a note of it, 427-FRSC, 427-3772, and give a call if anything I'm saying excites your I don't know, opposition, support, reflection, or whatever, or if I'm missing something that I should be on the subjects I'm covering. First thing I'm going to talk about, I'm going to be talking about a number of things tonight, ranging from San Diego's class action lawsuit on behalf of the poor and homeless of San Diego, and the city's recent, essentially, acknowledgement that they can no longer arrest people for sleeping outside, similar to what Los Angeles did on Skid Row after their practice, their police practice of arresting people at night was successfully challenged by the ACLU, and the Ninth Federal Court of Appeals found in a 2-1 decision at last April that that was unconstitutional, violation of the right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment, the Eighth Amendment to the Federal Constitution. That was appealed by the city of Los Angeles, but the city of Los Angeles decided to hedge its bets, and last month the city attorney declared a moratorium on arresting people at night. Now all we have to do in Santa Cruz is get our city attorney to follow the wisdom of the much more conservative city attorneys of Los Angeles and San Diego and stop arresting our homeless people at night. Santa Cruz, of course, has 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people in the city limits alone who have a total of, well, there's space for somewhere between 25 and 40 of them tonight. And then when the Winter Armory shelter opens, I'm not sure what the status is going to be with that this year or when that's going to happen, we'll have about maybe 150, 160 space for that many people, leaving, of course, hundreds and hundreds, the overwhelming majority outside, subject to $90 fines under the Santa Cruz City Sleeping Ban, the Santa Cruz City Camping Ordinance, and the Santa Cruz City Blanket Ban, all of them supported by virtually every city council candidate you can name who are running in this election, particularly the front runners Matthews and Rotkin. Bruce Van Allen, when he was mayor the first time back in 1979, announced he was opposed to the sleeping ban, but we haven't heard much out of him since. So whether he's actually going to do anything about that, it certainly hasn't been prominent or even mentioned in his campaign. As for Simba Kenyatta, also running for city council, he has kind of on occasion suggested he wants to have a dialogue about it, and he opposes it, these ordinances that criminalize the very basic life function of sleeping for homeless people. But it's hard to get a straight statement out of him, even when the Santa Cruz Metro asks a simple direct question on homelessness. He just won't go to that and answer it. So, folks, make up your own mind who to vote for. Some people in HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, suggest voting for Simba Kenyatta. Some suggest just voting, not voting at all on that issue. I encourage people to go to the polls and vote on other issues, such as yes on Measure G, yes on Measure K, the minimum wage for the city workers and the lowest priority for marijuana enforcement, respectively, as well as a variety of state propositions, which I hope to talk about on Sunday when I have a long show, 9:30 to 1. I keep trying to get our local experts in the studio, stalwart Steve Argue and Scope It Out Scott Graham. Whether I'll be successful in that particular venture, who knows? I haven't been so far. Anyway, you can come into the studio, at least voice-wise, by giving a call to 427-3772. I'm going to begin the show by doing a little reading from a Revere Radio. This is a website which discusses an issue that I was very concerned about, and then I read Wikipedia, which is the sort of online encyclopedia, user-created encyclopedia that's on the net, and became a little less concerned because they seemed less concerned. But I'm still concerned about it. This concerns the federal law signed at the same time as the infamous Military Commissions Act on October 17th, or Black Tuesday? I'm not sure if the 17th was a Tuesday or not, but it was certainly a black day when that law was signed by Executive Chief George Bush. It was also, of course, passed because the Democrats refused to filibuster it, not wishing to appear weak on terrorism, you know. At least not wishing to appear weak on terrorism from the grassroots, but But they don't mind, of course, being strong on terrorism from the government side. We, of course, have one of the most notorious terrorist governments in the world, which has a military budget, I think, greater than all the nine major countries that are runners-up in that contest combined. We also, of course, have the hugest store of nuclear weapons and are intent on building more. It's insanity, but it's in a very well methodically financed insanity, not to mention the, what is it, $10 billion a month now? It's going into the Iraqi war. I've got to make sure that figure is right. It was used to be, what, $7 billion? Now it's gone up. It's an obscene figure. It's beyond commentary almost, except, of course, that we have to keep talking about it because it keeps happening every day. And when our silence, we become complicitous or complicit if we don't speak out and do something about it. And what we can do, I've been wondering about and talking about for 3 years. I don't know. Or if I do, perhaps I don't have the courage to do it. Anyway, the same day that the Military Commissions Act was passed, this is the law that okays torture, unless it involves, I think, loss of limb, unless it involves some sort of very severe damage. So phony execution squads, waterboarding, which means making people think they're drowning, threatening to shoot someone's children, all these things are okay if the president says so, and he's not making clear what he says is okay and what he says isn't. Also, you can be designated an enemy combatant, particularly if you're a non-citizen, but even if you're a citizen, at the discretion of the president or the Secretary of Defense, currently Rumsfeld, or a tribunal that they appoint. This designation then means you can be held indefinitely without charges and without an attorney. Now, if they ever get to trying you by a military commission, then you will have certain limited rights, not, of course, in any way equal to those which are afforded people who currently have military trials, even in the military, or certainly not those who have civilian trials for terrorism, weighted as that is against the individual accused because of the massive resources of the prosecution, as well as the ability to tap into the hysterical sentiments in the country, still, even now, 5 years after the 2001 bombing of the Twin Towers in New York City and the Pentagon. So what happened on October 17th was the president signed this bill, Führer Bush signed this bill, which in essence gave him the power to declare anyone in this country an enemy combatant. And the only thing he has to do is show that, A, he's so designated, or, B, that you materially supported some group that he declared was a terrorist group. And, of course, one person's terrorist is the next person's freedom fighter, as we found when Reagan backed the terrorist fighters against the Nicaraguan government in the 80s, the Contras. Could this be a terrorist calling in? Well, let's find out. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Are you a terrorist?
Yes, I hope so. I'm a spinach terrorist.
Oh, dear, a spinach terrorist.
My God, my spanakopita wiped out the whole block. They just sit around and they won't move after I feed them.
What's your name there, terrorist?
It's Madison.
Madison, the frequent caller terrorist.
I know. I'm getting kicked off at Arnie. He's down here to talk to spinach when we have, like, this great problem. I'm going to beat my drum until I don't have to anymore.
Well,
have, like, this 30% increase in crime. I even emailed governor.com.
Slow down. Now, what is your comment for this evening, Madison, or at least for the moment?
I'm just looking at KSB What TV, and I'm hearing this governor of ours talk about spinach where Santa Cruz has a 30% increase in crime. And my other complaint for the day is I'm trying to vote absentee.
Uh-huh.
So in your little ballot, you get this yellow paper. And in the yellow paper, it says you need to send this in 7 days before. Look, I just woke up. I'm not stoned. You know what I mean? I'm a little more articulated than most people in Santa Cruz because I scored off the map on the SATs. I'm having trouble reading this baby, McPherson. And I would hate to have this trouble when I was 8.
Regarding what you do with the absentee ballot, I think you can actually bring it into the the second floor, I think it is, of the county building. Maybe it's the third floor.
Yeah, you can until 8 o'clock, which is really good. But, like, seniors, you know what they need? They can't read little print anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of these people that funds companies, that's a friend of ours, he, like, if the print is big enough, he'll fund it.
Madison, I'm not really talking about the size of the print on absentee ballots.
A date on there. It should say on the slip paper. You need to get this in by this
Okay, what we're trying to talk about right now has to do with the Insurrection Act and the War Commissions or Military Commissions Act. Any comments on that subject? That's what I was discussing when you called
on
it.
My family's the first family at Cal. I believe that neighborhoods can be fixed, and one block, one mailbox at a time through individuals talking to each other. They don't need to throw rocks, bricks, guns, nuclear bombs, or any of that other crap.
Okay, well, it sounds like you're not really following this particular topic, but if you do get on the radio and listen to it, then feel free to call in.
Basic. Yeah, I will. Okay, thanks,
right,
Robert.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
And excuse me for being a little abrupt there. I'm racing ahead here, and I suspect Madison may call in again anyway once she gets wind of what we're talking about. This is at the same time that this infamous Military Commissions Act was signed by the president, which also wipes out the so-called habeas corpus protection, which means the protection that says if you're charged, if they hold you, if you're in jail, you have a right to say, hold it, take me to a judge and tell me what the hell I'm in jail for. Habeas corpus means bring me the body, or here is the body, or this is the body, or it has something to do with the body, corpus and all that sort of thing. In any case, that is removed for non-citizens, and for citizens, all they have to do, they do have to bring you before a court if you're being held, but the only thing the court can decide is, are you being properly held as an enemy combatant? And, of course, the criterion for that has to be is simply that the president has decided you are an enemy combatant. At least that's what it looks like to me when I read this bill. If anybody has a different understanding of it, please call in. But now, the real thing that, because I've mentioned this, my concerns about the Military Commissions Bill, which isn't really about military commissions because, you know, they don't have trials for the people for the last 5 years. I think they're planning to have a couple now. But they've taken upon themselves the right to hold people, hundreds, thousands, some say up to, what is it? Is it 15,000 across the globe? 14,000, I think it is. Without trial, without charges, just because they're in their war on terrorism, which, of course, is a way of saying that they're people opposing policies of the U.S. government in different places that they decide are terrorist groups, and hence they have the right to strip them of all legal rights, declare war on them, and invade countries to repress, imprison, and kill them. It's pretty thin stuff, folks, for setting up military power, whether you're a Democrat or Republican. Unfortunately, both these parties support the general war on terrorism. It's just that the Kerryites and the Democrats think they can do it better, you know. They think they can do it more reasonably with more cooperation from the allies. Of course, the real war on terrorism would involve trying the war criminals in Washington, who, of course, are the terrorists. And don't look to see that happen anytime soon unless you're out there with the noose, or at least with the order and the demand that they appear before a court. I'm not a death penalty man myself, not even for those convicted of war crimes. However, the demand that this kind of mass murder stop, this kind of funded looting of Iraq stop, that the massive mythology that underlies our being there, which is, of course, being trumpeted big time by the Republicans and isn't really being actively opposed other than saying that, oh, the Republicans have a failed policy. Well, I've been saying for years not only should we never have gone into Iraq, we should obviously not have gone into Afghanistan either. We needed, of course, to go after criminals who blew up innocent civilians in New York, but not use that as a pretext to destroy civil liberties at home and invade countries abroad. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
It's me again.
Madison.
I'm thinking is, like, there's that poor kid who got married and maybe he realizes the future of his child and he's running all over Canada and here and there trying to get away from the military. Maybe the mayor needs to remind everybody that we called this Santa Cruz a sanctuary, like, way back in the 80s.
Well, I've actually suggested to Mayor Matthews and then previously Mayor Rotkin that they declare this city, or at least bring up at the city council a motion to declare Santa Cruz a sanctuary for war resistors, But they haven't done anything of the kind, nor has even the very green guru, retiring council member Tim Fitzmaurice. So.
Well, he was at Berkeley when my family was there, according to his father.
But it's a good idea. You know, I
support
it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I thought we were a nuclear-free, war-free, you know, immigrant rights promoter sanctuary. I thought we were that.
Well, yes.
I thought we were already at that, aren't we, Robert?
I think we're a nuclear-free zone, so apparently there are no nuclear weapons downtown. But aside from that, I don't think we're certainly not a war-free zone. If you saw it Halloween, with all the cops out there.
Okay, so is the next meeting next Tuesday? We got to go ask for it. Mandate it. Right?
What's that? Madison, what's that?
When's their next meeting so we can mandate that and just go down there and say, look.
The city council will meet the second Tuesday in November. They'll be changing councils based upon whether it's Rodkin, Matthews, and Van Allen or Rodkin, Matthews, and Robinson who come rolling in. Or perhaps they'll all, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll all go to Iraq to investigate local government there and not come back. Wouldn't that be interesting?
Well, the denial for, like, just seeing the younger people, especially the women radio announcers on here, they're so, like, wannabe Amy, it's disgusting. I mean, they have no clue of punk and how to really break the glass.
I'm going to get back, though, to the Insurrection Act, which is what I was talking about.
Yeah, we need some more insurrection locally to know what things affect globally.
Well, if we do, the Insurrection Act will take care of us. Anyway, thanks for calling in, Madison. Bye-bye. Yeah, the article I was about to read, and I have a guest in the studio, so I'm going to make it brief, is about the amendments to the Insurrection Act, and this is what this is about. President Bush, according to the writer on Revere Radio, there we go, has signed into law a provision which, according to Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, will actually encourage the president to declare federal martial law. It does so by revising the Insurrection Act, a set of laws that limits the president's ability to deploy troops within the United States. The Insurrection Act has historically, along with the Posse Comitatus Act, helped to enforce strict prohibitions on military involvement in domestic law enforcement. With one cloaked swipe of his pen, Bush is seeking to undo these prohibitions. This public law, called the John Warner Defense Authorization Act of 2007, again signed the same day as the Military Commissions Act, in a private Oval Office ceremony, allows the president to declare a public emergency and station troops anywhere in America and take control of state-based National Guard units without the consent of the governor or local authorities in order to, quote, suppress public disorder. President Bush seized this unprecedented power on the very same day, as I mentioned before, that he signed the equally odious Military Commissions Act. In a sense, the two laws complement one another. One allows for torture and detention abroad, while the other seeks to enforce acquiescence at home. Actually, it's not just abroad. The Military Commissions Act allows people to be detained here in this country, preparing to order the military onto the streets of America. Remember, the term for putting an area under military law enforcement control is precise. The term is martial law. Section 1076 of the Massive Authorization Act, which grants the Pentagon another $500-plus billion for its ill-advised adventures, is entitled Use of the Armed Forces in Major Public Emergencies. Section 333, Major Public Emergencies Interference with State and Federal Law, states that the president may employ the armed forces, including the National Guard, in federal service to restore public order and enforce the laws of the United States when, as a result of a natural disaster, epidemic, or other serious public health emergency, terrorist attack, or incident, or other condition in any state or possession of the United States, the president determines that domestic violence has occurred to such an extent that the constituted authorities of the state or possession are incapable or refuse or fail in maintaining public order in order to suppress in any state any insurrection, domestic violence, unlawful combination, or conspiracy. For the current president, enforcement of the laws to restore public order means to commandeer guardsmen from any state over the objections of local governmental, military, and local police entities, ship them off to another state, conscript them in a law enforcement mode, and set them loose against disorderly citizenry, protesters possibly, or those who object to forced vaccinations and quarantines in the event of a bioterror event. The law also facilitates militarized police roundups and detention of protesters, so-called illegal aliens, potential terrorists, and other undesirables for detention in facilities already contracted for and under construction by Halliburton. That's right, under the cover of a trumped-up immigration emergency and the frenzied militarization of the southern border. Detention camps are being constructed right under our noses, camps designed for anyone who resists the foreign and domestic agenda of the Bush administration. An article on recent contract awards on a recent issue of the Slick Insider Journal of Counterterrorism and Homeland Security Informational International reported that global engineering and technical services powerhouse KBR, Kellogg, Brown, and Root, announced in January 2006 that its government and infrastructure division was awarded an indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contract to support U.S. immigration and customs enforcement facilities in the event of an emergency. This is a longer article. For those of you who'd like to read it further, it's at revereradio.net, or just Google for Insurrection Act, and you'll be able to follow this. The reason that I'm not merely going out and starting some military training here as a potential Zapatista or Huacista or Apoista is because I also read in Wikipedia, certainly not Spanish, in the studio with me making commentary. Grab that mic if you want to make some rude comments, Scott.
Is it not on yet.
Of course it's not on. Now it's on. Is Scope It Out Scott Graham, a local political commentator and supporter of questionably conservative candidates like the anti-homeless Bruce Van Allen, I suppose. But he will get into that himself in a moment. Anyway, if you're interested in this situation, the reason I'm not terribly excited, I mean, I am excited. I am disturbed about the Insurrection Act amendments. Wikipedia claims that this modification, which Patrick Leahy, Vermont senator, was alarmed about, but he was the only one, apparently, that this is simply a repetition of a prior act which adds the word insurrection to it and also requires the president to report to Congress in 14 days. So, you know, I suppose once they get you in the stadium and shoot you down, 14 days from now, there will be a report made to Congress on the whole matter. Scott, am I being an alarmist again? Am I, you know, getting people all excited about nothing? What do you think?
Well, the thing that alarms me about what you just read was the part about the government being able to inject people with drugs if there's a bioterror alert or something like this. You know, what happens to people that don't want to immunize their kids? I mean, there is a lot of talk out there that possibly the child immunizations that they give the kids is one of the reasons why so many kids in the last 10 or 20 years or so have been born with all sorts of, or not necessarily born, but like, develop all sorts of weird problems. I wonder if this particular law will be either used to take kids away from their parents if the parents don't want to have their kids immunized or have forced immunizations.
Well, maybe I should read a little more about this. You want me to read a little more of this? It doesn't have a lot of detail about that particular issue, though.
No, that's okay. I mean, I just assume get to what I'm doing and then get out of here.
Typical, Scott. Abandoning the very important agenda for your own private, personal agenda. Well, check out this article, folks. Again, it's if you go to Insurrection Act on Google, you'll be able to get to it. You might look up Insurrection Act and Military Commissions Act too. Those are both, and they were passed, I should say, signed on the same day. I'll be reading more about this later in the show, perhaps if I run out of steam, or perhaps pick up ahead of steam. If you pick up ahead of steam and you want to call in, 427-3772 is the call-in number. But with me here is a man with a sample ballot open. And what does this mean, Scott? You have some advice for us on some of these measures from the ballot here?
Well, yeah. I'd like to give my two cents out there. Basically, the ballot this year is loaded with... The ballot this year is really heavily weighted with all sorts of bond measures and secret taxes. And on the state level, you've got measure 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D, and 1E, which altogether is about, I think, $47 billion in bonds, which once... you float that bond, then you have to pay back double. So, you know, the ads on TV and on the radio about it claim that it's like, oh, we'll pay for this stuff. We'll do this stuff now, pay for it over time with no increase in taxes. Well, how are they going to pay for it unless they increase people's taxes? It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's a foolish argument. The problem I see here is it's a constant thing in government. I call it the drunken sailor syndrome, where the legislators go out like a bunch of drunk sailors and spend all the taxpayers' money on just about anything they can think of. Not necessarily the things the taxpayers would like to see them spend the money on. And then when they run out of money, it's much like a band of drunken sailors running out of money at a bar somewhere. Instead of going back to the ship and sobering up, they ask for a loan so that they can keep on drinking. So this is basically what our legislators and our governor is proposing here, is that we let them stay drunk. And they're drunk with the power of the money that we are, as taxpayers, reluctantly give to them.
As devil's advocate, Scott, sorry. As devil's advocate, what do these five measures actually purport to give money for, and why are they claimed to be needed?
Well, 1A is the Transportation Funding Protection Legislative Constitutional Amendment. And basically what that is that, I don't know if it was the last election or the election before that, there was another bond measure to do a bunch of transportation projects, one of which was the high-speed train from L.A. to San Francisco to Sacramento. Now, this is supposedly supposed to protect that for some, you know, that there's no, that protect that money from being used by the legislature in some other way. Well, the legislature already has used this money in a different way. So I don't think by us voting to protect some money...
How much are they talking about here?
It doesn't actually say.
Okay.
I'm sure it does.
Move on to 1B then. What do we got?
Okay, the highway... 1B is the highway safety, traffic reduction, air quality, and port security bond act of 2006. Now, this one would be for $19,925,000,000, which basically you have to repay $38.9 billion over the 30-year life of the bond. And this is to supposedly make our highways safer, help with mass transit and port security.
Port security. Now, there's an important aspect.
Well, I mean, supposedly... You know, port security should be handled by the feds since 9/11, and because we aren't a red state, we always get shortchanged on this stuff. Even though we send more money to Washington than any other state because we're the most populous state, therefore our tax the heaviest because we have more people to tax, less money comes back here per person than almost any other state. And as far as the Homeland Security money to protect our ports, I mean, they're doing stuff in ports in Virginia where there is no actual port traffic other than leisure boats, where they're spending more money than they spend at the Port of Oakland or the Port of Long Beach, which are, I think, the number two and number three busiest ports in the United States.
So we're saying, is the threat that large companies that are looting the world are bringing in their profits through these ports and depositing them in U.S. banks to control U.S. politicians? Is that what we're talking about here?
No, what it is they're afraid of a dirty bomb or a biological bomb or something.
Such as the Pentagon might have.
Yeah.
I see.
Coming in. Uh-huh. But, you know, to me, this is not something that the state should be worrying about. It's something that the Fed should be worrying about. And if they don't care... Then I personally think that California should stop sending money to the federal government, but, you know, that's just me.
1C?
Okay, 1C is Housing and Emergency Shelter Trust Fund Act of 2006.
Aha, now that's a homeless issue. That's something I often cover. Don't we want to support more housing for the homeless?
Well, normally I would say yes, but the way that this bond has worked out in the past is that the money ends up going to various organized groups, such as Mercy Charities Housing.
Ah, the group that destroyed housing in the Beach Flats?
Yeah, or what's that group that runs the one housing thing down there at the...
Santa Cruz Counseling?
Or? No, it's some guy's name.
Rebelly.
Family
shelter?
But
in any case, go make it.
But anyway, there's a, all these different nonprofit groups end up getting federal grants for this money or state grants. And they, a lot of them end up wasting a lot of the money in their own bureaucracies before it actually ever touches the ground. And then they control who stays there. And so, there's a lot of homeless people that have drug and alcohol problems. They're immediately not allowed in most of these places, because you got to be straight and sober.
Wait a minute, you're sounding like the ISSP program here in Santa Cruz.
In order to be there, you got to be straight and sober. Mm. If you have, let's say, a dog, which a lot of homeless people do, or a cat, or even a pet monkey or a lizard, you're not allowed in these places.
Well, you just have a lizard sitter. You have a dog sitter when you go in.
Well, maybe we can get Arnold to fund that or something.
Well, also, of course, in Santa Cruz, it's even illegal to park your car on many streets. As you say, maybe you want to park your car and then legally go into these shelter programs. You can't do that because having your car between the hours of 12 and 6 on many streets in Harvey West, on the west side of town, downtown area, is illegal. A specifically anti-homeless proposal that was pushed by Matt Farrell and passed by the Matthews-Rotkin Council.
No, it wasn't pushed by Matt Farrell. It was pushed by the Downtown Neighbors Group, which is actually three people: Jerry Mandel, William Rubles, and I can't remember the third guy's name, Rob something or other, of Rob and Gigo.
DeFreitas.
Yeah, Rob DeFreitas. Well, these yahoos hold meetings claiming to be the Downtown or the Downtown Neighbors Association, do not publicize their meetings because they don't want anyone else showing up. They don't want anyone else having any impact at all on what they present to the council.
It sounds like the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. So go
ahead. Yeah, but that's what I was talking about, Paige Smith House.
Right.
Okay, money goes to something like that, okay? Yeah. Anyway, to get back to this Downtown Neighbors group, they have been pushing for a permit parking program downtown for at least a dozen years.
And they've succeeded.
Yeah, they finally got it through. And they're all big buddies with Matthews. And
Cynthia Matthews, our mayor, I might add.
Yeah, hopefully not for too much longer. She always reminded me, I don't know if any of you saw that, what was it, Sergeant Pepper's movie? Or no, Yellow Submarine. It was a Peter Max cartoon with the Beatles. And there's those meanies.
The blue meanies?
The blue meanies, right. Cynthia's always reminded me of one of those characters. She's totally persnickety, just like they were, and wants everything done exactly her way. And she's just like...
Have you actually ever talked to Cynthia at any length on any subject, Scott?
No, she won't talk to me.
In fact, you've tried, but you've been
unsuccessful. Oh, yeah, I've tried to bend her ear before, and she's just like, oh, I don't have time.
Because remember...
have time.
she, of course, was originally elected, I think, in 1992 or something, or perhaps 94, and she... she would never talk to me, but this year she has actually she allowed me to interview her and play that interview on free radio. So I'm not sure whether it's simply because I'm more good looking than I used to be, or she feels more secure in power. You might try again to have a chat with, because I suspect she will be there for four more years, as we used to say about Richard M. Nixon.
Yeah.
Now, frankly, this is much more interest to me than running through this ballot. And I I'd like to do it. Maybe it would be best to do that at a time when our audience actually has the ballot in front of them. And I'm hoping. Can you possibly come back and do this on Sunday morning?
Well, possibly, but what would you rather talk about Cynthia than talk about these?
Local politics.
Okay, let me go run down the rest of these real quick, and then we can do it in depth later.
One C, D, and E, quickly.
Okay. Well, we already did that. Okay. Housing and shelter, no.
Okay.
Kindergarten, university, public education facilities, bond act, which is 1D. Every election, there's some sort of Educational Facilities Bond Act. We had one at every election for the past 20 years, and the buildings are still falling apart. They haven't fixed them yet. What are they doing with all this damn money? Stop giving them the money. Make them do something, okay? Before you give them any more money, make them do something with the money you gave them the last 25 times. 1E, Disaster Preparedness and Flood Prevention Bond Act of 2000. Okay, this is to fix the levees out there around Sacramento and the Central Valley. Who cares? We don't live out there. Let all them hicks get flooded out. Let the legislature be swimming up in their Sacramento.
This is our very own local nativist Rube Scott Graham talking. Do you have any comments? You want to challenge his ridiculous views?
No, but the
427-3772 is the number to call.
But the thing here again, this is a federal agency is in charge of this kind of stuff, which is the Army Corps of Engineers. And also, Homeland Security as FEMA is supposed to be paying for this stuff, not the people of California. The FEMA guy came out here and said, oh, there's no problem with your levies. He said the same thing in Louisiana.
Right. Here we got a caller here. Hi there. You're on Free Radio with Scope It Out, Scott and Uncle Robert.
It's Madison again.
Hey, Madison.
In relation to the parking program downtown,
yes.
Unbelievably, that was started by people in the earthquake. When the planning meetings happened at the earthquake, everybody wanted to go green. And so the idea for the parking program was to make parking limited downtown so you all would ride your bicycles.
No, you've got that wrong.
No, I don't. Go back and do the history.
We have a disagreement here.
We do.
The downtown neighbors, they do publicize. They put out flyers all over downtown when they have meetings. I've been to several. I own a home downtown. And I remember calling from L.A. to find out what was going on after the quake, and that was part of the planning because I used to ride my bike from Aptos way up on Cathedral, like way in the back, where some people carry chainsaws to get to school.
Well, remember, Madison, that the actual parking signs, if you look at them probably in front of your house, say not just, you got to get a permit for parking for more than 2 hours, which I suppose is to facilitate, having a parking place on your own street. But also they say no parking whatsoever between 12 and I think it's 5 or 6 in the morning, which is a deliberately anti-homeless move because nobody really needs those parking spaces
at that time. That's why it was done. It has nothing to do with the downtown recovery plan.
Yeah, I lived in this neighborhood, and I've done the worst ghettos in the nation, South Central and South First.
So?
South First was supposed to be more vicious.
Right,
and I left to come back to Santa Cruz to get a break after fixing two ghettos, got back here, found this to be three times worse than either of those put together.
What's the point, Madison?
Since the parking program was instigated,
right,
we actually have far less stabbing, far less seniors knocked down, far less homes broken into because... Not that I'm blaming the homeless because
this contradicts what you've told me in previous calls. You've told me that you're concerned about the surge in rapes, about the surge in violence.
And we have, and even though we've been
the surge in violence in your neighborhood.
Even though we've backed it off downtown, listen, Robert, even though we've been backing it off down here, the numbers are still going up in other parts of the community. And so what we found with the 20 vans on our street that used to be here that are not.
20 vans on your street.
Unbelievably,
you're talking about Maple Street?
Yeah, there were so many.
20 vans. I don't recall there being 20 vans on Maple Street any time. I think live on Maple Street, right, Scott? Have you seen 20 vans on Maple Street?
Not anymore.
Ever?
Maybe police vans.
No, that's
in front of Madison's house, hauling her away.
Now.
No, they don't even come here. This one woman, Joan, went after one guy who was running a business, and his business was to buy
Anyway, Madison, I catch your drift about. I know you're going into other stuff, but
safer.
What's that?
It's gotten safer and it's gotten more Santa Cruz as we got.
So your feeling is it's gotten safer. Well, thank you for the call.
Yeah.
Has it gotten safer, Scott, in Santa Cruz?
No, because I mean, just like this whole Halloween fiasco. Last year there was a gang fight, and instead of the city doing something about gangs, trying to alleviate the gang problem in the city, they decided it was more necessary to say, oh, let's triple the fines on being drunk. Let's triple the fines on people yelling and screaming and running down the street. Let's triple the fines on almost anything except stabbing people, except killing people, and except being a gang member. And instead of doing something about gangs, they did something to everybody else except the gangs. So then, of course, this Halloween, we have another gang fight and a stabbing, all gang-related. The city did nothing about it, except that supposedly, according to what Zach Friend said a
police spokesperson,
said on TV, was that they had the gang task force from Salinas, Monterey County, Santa Cruz County, the Watsonville Police, and the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's, and the police, and the State Parole Board were all downtown Halloween night following the gang members around. Instead of telling them, hey, turn around and go home, or we're going to arrest any one of you that's on probation or parole for hanging out with each other, which is a violation of your probation or parole, they just followed them around until there was a fight and a stabbing. What the hell good did any of that do? I mean, these people got their heads so far up their asses, it's unbelievable.
Well, are you suggesting that individual members who are gang members should not have been allowed to be downtown for the celebration? Or
if they are on probation or parole, a condition of their probation and parole is that they're not supposed to hang out with each other.
Do we know that any of these people that are suspects either last year or this year in the stabbings were in that category?
I don't know about the suspects in the stabbing, but I do know that many of the gang members are on probation or parole, and they're not supposed to hang out with one another.
Let's see what this... Maybe we got a gang member calling in.
Okay.
Hi there, are you a gang member?
Yeah, I'm the Maple Gang. I totally agree with
it's the Maple Street Gang, yes.
Yes, Maple. We're the biggest radicals here. We force the change we want in Santa Cruz. But this guy's right. Last year I called about the seven meth head. It was a freight train on meth gang heading down the street right after the Green Ferry left. And the dispatch did not listen. And unbelievably, this year at 9:45 when the meth head came to start a fight on Maple, the same crowd that went down there. We had seven last year stabbings, two this year.
Now, was that on Maple? Hold it, Madison. Was
they
that
come
on,
in on Maple, and
was
I
that,
told
wait a minute, was the, where was the stabbing? Where did it actually happen, do you know?
At the Metro.
Happened at the Metro. And the last year, the seven stabbings were...
At 11, and I called them at 10:45, telling them, they're heading your way, you might as well end
and,
up...
And where were those stabbings last year?
Last year, they were behind the New Leaf in the parking lot.
Thank you.
But they came in on Maple, and they wandered up through, and there were seven stabbings.
Well, you know, I was reading, frankly, talking to both of you about this, there's a similar and even bigger crowd of people, of course, in the Castro during a Halloween celebration. And that has also, you know, evoked a call for more police surveillance, more police controls, and some responses. I'm going to read something about that shortly. I want to get your reaction, Scott. Madison, thanks for the call. Anything else?
Well, he's absolutely right that these people, I mean, the triple fine zone was my idea, and I think we need to apply it to schools because there's 782.
Well, Scott opposes the triple fine zone, so
right
he couldn't be right on that issue.
Right? Gang stuff.
If you support that. Anyway, thank you, Madison.
One of the kids on the news last night with the white face, we have called on that kid and trying to keep him out of trouble for at least 3.5 years, and nobody has picked him up from, you know, he was one of the main dealers on Maple.
Okay, well, thank you.
And it's...
I cut you off, Madison, because, again, although a lot of these facts are interesting in and of themselves, may well be accurate, we're going to try to get to the specifics. Halloween in San Francisco. This is a story from BeyondCron.com. BeyondCron.com is sort of the left-wing analysis of the Chronicle. And this story by Ted Strauser. Newsom and Dufty try to kill Halloween. Halloween is a Tuesday night this year. It may be raining. Indeed, it will be cold and almost certainly will be spooky. Mayor Newsom is creating the perfect storm with his plan to replace entertainment with police. And
So this was written before Halloween.
It was.
And okay, so why is it pertinent?
Well, it's pertinent because the same kind of tactics are being used, the same philosophy, which
I think
you and I both oppose.
Shouldn't you be reading something that this guy wrote after Halloween?
Well, I actually have that, too.
Okay.
I wanted to set the scene.
Yeah,
though.
But I want to try to get through this.
Yeah, you're in a hurry. You want to have your own agenda here. Let's move ahead, then, to what happened after, if I can find the damn thing, after Halloween. And I don't know if I actually can. I thought I had it on here, but I may have to look for it again. The point.
So how do you like that Mark Foley picture I brought and gave to the Free Radio Collective?
I want to deal with the Halloween situation here, Scott, before we go any further. The idea of more police downtown, spotlights, helicopters roaming overhead with spotlights, you know, down on the crowd. And what I saw was, for example, a rather massive overreaction to arrests. I saw two arrests. Well, one detention and one arrest. The arrest I saw was for a person who was not drunk, and who was in some kind of a costume. He was surrounded by six police officers, and as I attempted to ask him what was happening, police officers advanced on me, of course, demanding that I move along. And I said, "No way." I whipped out my tape recorder, said, "Can you clarify?" and so forth. And, of course, they kept staring at me and advancing on me and adopting, I would say, if I were a gang member, you know, if I were a person who was in a macho mood, of course, who wants to challenge somebody with a badge and a gun in a group of six? You know, it might have had some kind of, you know, sparking kind of effect. Anyway, it seemed to me that it's the same kind of, it's like using the terrorism pretext nationally, using the fact that there is more of a tumultuous climate, it's developed that way. I mean, you know, whether it's because of economic issues or because of other issues locally, you know, you have, last year you did have seven stabbings. Although I guess at New Year's, what did you have? What kind of violence do we have at New Year's?
I'm not sure. I know that they had that weird fence set up downtown.
It wasn't New Year's. It wasn't Halloween. I double-checked on that.
They did that on New Year's, too, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But I know they did it on Halloween. But this time, they didn't have fences down the middle of the street.
Right. That was supposedly to let ambulances in, but it didn't work.
No, just
crowded
people.
And all it did
people.
Is create pinch points where, you know, people were pushing and shoving each other. Women were getting groped. And it was just, you know, it was a really stupid idea. But, you know, we had a CHP helicopter flying overhead here in Santa Cruz.
And
all
CHP
night.
Officers were the ones who were doing some of the arrests.
And they, you know, what the hell was that all about? Why do all the neighbors that live downtown, far enough away from Pacific Avenue to not really have the party on Pacific bothering them, have to be bothered by this damn helicopter buzzing a couple... You know, maybe 50 feet above their house, every pass it makes. I mean, it was unbelievable. Every time it would pass over my house would shake. And I was like, what are these assholes up to? And when I went downtown finally, I asked one of the cops, I go, what's this helicopter all about? And he goes, I don't know. I go, well, is it, you know, a police helicopter, a news helicopter? He goes, oh, I think it's a news helicopter. Well, obviously this cop was lying to me. He probably knew it was the CHP. He just didn't want to tell me.
Now, what time did you go downtown, Scott?
I went downtown. I saw you downtown, Robert.
Right. You were. Did you stay very long after that meeting?
I stayed till about 11.
Yeah, I left about 10:30. I was curious whether things got any different because as the evening grew, you know, grew later, the crowds grew thicker, and there was people were some more voluble, and there is a quality to the downtown festivities that even though the costumes are great. And some of the people are great. There can be a kind of a nasty alcoholic edge to a lot of it.
Well, later in the day, evening, more and more people are coming down from their private parties. You know, like everybody leaves the party to go downtown for an hour or whatever. And that usually happens around 11 to from between 11 and 1, people leave their parties to go downtown.
You're on the air with Scott and Robert.
What happened is... Sorry, Clinton left Monterey at 10:30 in the Black Hawk under the radar. He flew over, and then the other helicopter came over.
How do you know that our former president was in Monterey?
Well, if you know the difference between a cheapo CHP helicopter and a Blackhawk, the difference between a Mercedes and a
So Bob, you have no independent information, but you're making that judgment based upon your helicopter.
Well, flies around a Blackhawk, like three people.
Her helicopter
Clinton,
noise
you know,
recognition software.
We got
software.
The president, we got that other idiot, Alberto, who runs up the hills with his girlfriend.
Right, but you have nobody told you that Clinton was in
Monterey.
Well,
he was gone up, because we know where he's taking. Well, if you know the Carmel Valley, we do know. And then he goes on up to the city.
I have no idea, but I mean, I don't think it's terribly important. But any other comments, Madison?
Well, you know, you guys left at 10:30. It doesn't even get to thick till after that. The last three Halloweens before that, it was like defend your fortress. My neighbor had 24 packs thrown at his house, both sides of me. For some reason, they respect my house because it looks like an artist lives here, and for some reason, the drunks respect the artist. And everybody else, there's bottles, bricks, cans, 24 packs. Literally, they were drunk. People come. Fences. It was unbelievable.
And you found that there was less of that the last 2 years?
This year was like I was shocked at how well-behaved everybody was. And my neighbor who's handicapped, some girl, you know, with a child, stole all her candy when she put it out because she can't bring it in and out because she's handicapped. And she tried to chase her down the street with her cane, which was really unfortunate. But everybody
this year it was less violent than in past years on Maple Street?
By far.
Thank you.
By far, it was like we lived here in a great
Appreciate the update. Thank you. Scott, what about you? You were a block away from that. You're also on Maple Street. Was it any different this year than the last couple of years as far as violence, bottles, that sort of thing?
No, there was just as much. Actually, there was more trash on the street this year because it was trash night in our neighborhood. So people put their trash cans out, which then got tipped over. And unless they made it, you know, unless these individuals made it out there before 5 in the morning and put the trash back in the trash containers, the garbage men wouldn't pick it up, you know. They wouldn't even, you know, if your trash can was laying on its side, they wouldn't even pick it up and empty whatever's left in the can. They just leave it there, you know. So the city, you know, could have, like, foresaw this because they know what day garbage day is downtown. And they could have, like, sent a notice to all the neighbors and say, listen, your garbage is either getting picked up the next day or it's getting picked up, you know, 6 or 7 hours later. So don't put it out at night. Put it out the next morning.
Well, I found the article in the Beyond Cron about the Castro Halloween celebration the day after. I'm going to read it. It's pretty short. It's by Tommy Avacoli, Mecca. And I think if this is you, Madison, I'm going to cut you off because I want to get through this article, but we'll see who it is. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
So who is it that's knocking those trash cans over anyway?
Who is this calling in? You better identify yourself.
Who would it be? Who would it be that would be stabbing people? Who would it be that would be, and, you know.
Hey, caller, what's your name? What's your name, caller?
Being, you know, an asshole for
caller,
no reason.
Caller.
Who would it be?
You're not being responsive, caller. Answer the question, caller.
The fucking questions here,
you
buddy.
You may be asking them, but I control the muffle button.
And you can hang up on
we'll
me.
Call you, we'll call you Ms. X.
But all right, it. All right.
Ms. X.
It's a bunch of punk-ass boys.
Okay. I'm wondering what the point of your comment was. Go ahead.
Punk-ass boys.
Well, thank you, caller. I appreciate your thoughts.
You're welcome,
on that.
And thank you for supporting that kind of mentality.
Well, I didn't say that. What do you think? Is it mainly punk-ass boys who are causing trouble downtown, Scott?
Well, I don't know. It's everybody's causing trouble downtown. It's not. I mean, I would say that a lot of the physical damage is caused by men, but you know they're doing it to try to impress women, which is like really a stupid idea. But such is life.
Continuing with this article, or beginning this article, this is about the Castro at Halloween. The mainstream media and the politicians are missing the point again. What happened in the Castro on Halloween night is part of a much bigger problem. Our city is becoming scary. The body count is looking like Iraq on a bad day. In 2005, homicides in the city hit an all-time high in San Francisco of 96. Much of it was gang-related. As of August 29th of this year, the city has had 62 killings in the first half of 2006, which is higher than last year's record of 47 for the same time period. On one particularly bloody Sunday, August 27th, the San Francisco Chronicle reported that 5 people were murdered. According to reports in the press, the shooting at Noe and Market on Halloween night started over the throwing of a bottle into a group of young people. Though police are not officially saying it, the incident seems to have involved at least one gang. 10 people so far are reported to have been shot. Then, too, there is the recent wave of robberies and rapes in the Castro. No one is calling for a shutdown of the neighborhood because people are suddenly preying on gay men. But politicians are saying that the future of the annual costume event is in doubt. The problem is not Halloween in the Castro. The trouble is that the mayor has not done anything to effectively address the growing violence in our streets. The police force is about as effective in stopping gang shootings as Muni is in keeping a schedule, with no plan other than to increase beat cops and pour more money into a useless police department. It's easy for police and public officials to blame everything on Halloween. Granted, Halloween in the Castro is not what it used to be. I find it rather boring myself. When I arrived here in 1991, it was more about celebrating queer outrageousness and sexuality. My first Halloween was spent naked on the corner of 18th and Castro with a group of radical fairies. We weren't posing for tourists. Since 2002, things have gotten a little rough around the edges with stabbings and fights that have made it risky to wear your best ball gown without a bulletproof vest. The crowd has become straighter and definitely not as warm and fuzzy as it used to be. More and more out-of-towners are coming for the freakiness of it all rather than any sense of Halloween as a gay holiday. This year it didn't help that neighbors and merchants decided on their own that it was time to close down the time-honored tradition. Merchants complained about losing money. Neighbors were concerned about noise and trash. Castro Supervisor Bevan Dufty met with locals to try and work it out, but the meeting was not well publicized. It sounds familiar, Scott. I live in the neighborhood and I didn't know about it. When plans were drawn up, there seemed to be no room for input from anyone who disagreed. But once again, politicians are deciding the fate of Castro Halloween behind closed doors. Isn't it time for a truly open and well-publicized community meeting about the violence, not only at Halloween, but throughout the city? Isn't it time for the mayor to listen to the communities that are being affected by the violence? Solutions need to be found to the epidemic of gang-related violence, to the robberies and rapes in the Castro, to the rising homicide rate. The police need to be held accountable for their inability to do anything about the increasing murders. The mayor can't stop Halloween on the Castro. They can stop Halloween in the Castro, but it won't put an end to the slaughter on our streets. That's by Tommy Avicoli, Mecca, a radical working-class Southern Italian queer performer, activist, and writer. Your comment, and caller, you can call again, but if you've called before, you might want to give it a rest while Scott gives his own thoughts on these issues.
Well, a lot of what was just said there could be applied to Santa Cruz. I mean... Santa Cruz, supposedly, the downtown merchants, the downtown neighbors, and the police all got together with John Barisoni and Dick Wilson's Robert's favorite two guys.
Deadeye Dick Wilson, he's the one.
And formulated the plans for this year's Halloween celebration. Well, hey guys, it was a dismal failure, you know. So, to me, a better solution would be to have a community meeting and let's talk about violence in our community. You know, I mean, the biggest part of violence in this community happens to be gang violence. And as long as everybody wants to wear blinders and try to pretend it doesn't exist, that's not going to solve the problem or have anything to do with creating a solution to this problem.
You know any gang members, Scott?
Do I know any gang? Yes, I do, as a matter of fact.
Do you talk to them about these issues at all? I mean,
I've told the gang members that I know personally, I keep on telling them, whenever I see them, I say, go watch The Godfather. See what the Italians did. Stop killing each other. Stop fighting amongst yourselves. Get rich. Open casinos in Nevada.
Shoot the mayor. Now, what am I saying?
No, but it's like, you know, they could get rich and open casinos in Nevada if they, like, would stop killing each other.
All you got to do is talk to a couple legislators, join an Indian tribe. You'll be all set.
Right? Yeah.
You're tuned to Free Radio. It's about 7 o'clock. 427-3772 is the number to call. In the studio with me is Scott Graham. And Scott is trying, admittedly, with numerous interruptions and digressions, some of which are rather interesting, to get through the sample ballot, which will be available for you to vote on November 7th on Tuesday. Scott, there's some concern about balloting fraud, which, of course, is being raised. I guess tomorrow night there's going to be a... it's tonight, I believe. There's actually a thing happening at the Veterans Hall. I should go on Indy Media and look it over, make sure that I can announce it so I don't disappoint some people who are interested in that.
Well, I mean, what are you talking about, voter fraud? I mean, people that aren't allowed to vote, or that the voting machines tally the wrong vote counts.
That, I guess, a comment, but I guess the Diebold voting machines is one concern. You know, the fact that there's widespread sentiment that the last two presidential elections have been fraudulent.
Oh, of course, yeah. Well,
my question to folks who raise that issue is what does that have to do with the elections in Santa Cruz? Do you feel there's been much voter fraud in Santa Cruz? Should we be concerned about that? And if so, how can we be concerned about that?
Well, I had a friend some years ago that was from Canada, and he registered to vote in Santa Cruz, and it would actually vote even though he was not a U.S. citizen. He was a Canadian citizen. But the Santa Cruz Elections Commission, or whatever the hell they are, never checked out his information. That he even wrote down that his birthplace was Quebec, and they still allowed him to vote. They even tried to get him on a jury. You know, he sent him a jury duty notice. So,
but that sounds incidental rather than, you know, like some kind of conspiracy or organized fraud. We have a caller. Hi there. Are you a fraudulent voter, perhaps?
Well, there was something on the internet news on the cell phone today that said that Santa Cruz County actually has voting machines from a company in the East Bay that was supposedly connected to Chavez or somebody, but there's a yellow reset button on the back, and all you have to do is push it, and all those votes go away. So we really do need so much for McPherson kicking the balls under the water when you're playing water polo.
Thank you.
Way back.
Madison often has very colorful things to say. But again, I guess I know that I've heard a lot of people are concerned about national election fraud. Should we be concerned all about local election fraud?
Well,
and if so, what do we do?
Yeah, I would say that we should wonder why Mike Rockin, somebody that's hated all over town, why he keeps on getting reelected with the numbers that he gets. I mean, people should know the guy is like just spewing diarrhea constantly. And maybe it's time to really look in to find out if someone is manipulating those votes.
Well, you and I both disagree with Mayor Rotkin and find him in many respects.
You mean Shadow Mayor Rotkin?
Shadow. Well, yeah. Matthews is nominally mayor, and on 95% of the issues, Matthews votes with Rotkin. So it's true. I regard Rotkin as the shadow mayor here. But, you know, it's nice to badmouth Rotkin, but you're not actually suggesting that there's some massive voter fraud around Rotkin's election, are you? And if so, do you have any evidence of that?
No, I have no evidence, other than the fact that, you know, almost everyone that I talk to dislikes the guy. And it seems like it's spread far and wide. I mean, old ladies are scared to death of him because they think he's a commie. And it's just like, how does the guy keep on getting elected and keep on getting elected as the top vote-getter most of the time?
Well, he spends the most money. He and Matthews are spending the most money. He has the highest name recognition.
Lynn Robinson is spending the most money. She didn't agree to the spending
list. Oh, really?
Yeah.
But Rotkin is spending quite a piece of change.
Yeah.
$27,000,
$30,000. Well, you know, okay, I mean, I'll agree with you there that he's spending a lot of money. He always gets, you know, because of his connection with the university, he always reserves the back page of the Fish Wrap and the back page of City on the Hill for his own campaign
publicity
ads the week before the election. Or if he's not up for election that year, whoever he's choosing to, like, be on the council with him.
Yes, you're on free radio.
Where is Lynn getting the money when she's a gardener? From the feds? I think so.
The boardwalk. Her husband is the boardwalk's lobbyist in Sacramento. She is in Charlie Canfield's back pocket, along with Matthews and Rockin.
Really?
Really? And John Robinson, who once worked for the Sentinel as a cheesy bad news reporter, I guess quit his Sentinel job to become a full-time publicist for the Seaside Company or lobbyist?
Well, he was the publicist for the Seaside Company for a few years. And then when Mike Schmidt ran off with your rabbi somewhere to have some gay love affair, John decided to start his own company with Charlie's money to be a lobbyist in Sacramento, not only for the Seaside Company, but a bunch of other amusement parks in California to make sure that, you know, like, no laws were created to, like, restrict amusement parks in any way, shape, or manner.
Let me ask you about the Seaside Company. I know an issue that's been on the back burner, but is still around. You see it occasionally on the city council agenda. Is the Tidelands ripoff that the Seaside Company pulled in the 30s, where they built their parking lot on property that it was above the mean high tide mark, and hence should be public or state property at the very least, and yet they've been making profit off of it for years, and there's been a city lawsuit that hasn't really gone very far. What's happening with that, Scott?
Well, that's not a city. That was actually the Seaside Company brought along, because the city, back when Crone and Sugar were on the city council, they were considering doing a lawsuit against the Seaside Company about this issue, and they never did it. So instead, the Seaside Company decided that they would sue the city over it because they want clear title to the land. And to clarify, it's not just about the parking lot along the river. It's the entire parcel of land that the boardwalk sits on, and the beach going, what is it, north of there, where the volleyball courts are. The boardwalk claims they own that beach. They own from the volleyball courts on the beach. Across from La Bahia. They claim they own from those volleyball courts all the way down to the river, and then around the corner and that whole parking lot. So it's not just the parking lot. Mm-hmm. It's also the land the boardwalk itself sits on.
Right.
It's all part of this 1933 case, which was a case of what they call adverse possession, which is also commonly referred to as squatter's rights, that if you use a piece of property for 7 years and make improvements to it, you can claim that property. That's what the boardwalk did. Is a bunch of friggin' carnies came into town, sent their tents up on our beach, and then stayed there for 7 years and said, this is ours now.
Plus, they got elected to the mayor of Santa Cruz.
Yeah, well, that's another problem with this whole thing, is that Swanton, who was at the time mayor of Santa Cruz, was also the head of the Seaside Company, and he should have recused himself from voting on the issue of whether or not the city would deal with them on the land issue.
We have a caller. Hey there, caller. Are you new or are you an old caller?
I'm an old one. Highway 17 wasn't even built in the 30s. And the Coastal Commission, my dad was one of the founding people that grass-rooted it, and that was because Getty was trying to shut all the surfing all the way down the state. We had beach houses all the way down, and my dad's all the kids were going to
slow down and say that again.
Well, in the 30s, the Highway 17 wasn't even built, nor was 280. 280 didn't even go in.
Right, so?
Well, the Coastal Commission didn't even get established till after San Bruno Mound. First, the Gulf.
We're not talking about the Coastal Commission.
Well, that's what regulates all of the coast.
What is your point, Madison?
Well, he wants to argue the Coastal Commission point, but
no, it's not a Coastal Commission issue. It's an issue of tidelands, which is a federal and state issue. All submerged tidelands in navigable waters,
the Mead tideline,
are not to be sold, exchanged, or anything else done with them. They are to be kept in the public trust. The boardwalk came in, a bunch of carnies, set up their tents, stay there for 7 years, and then went to court and claimed that they own the property, did not own it. The people of the state of California own it.
Easy. You got the microphone,
Scott.
Go ahead.
This didn't start happening until the late 50s, early 60s.
What didn't start happening?
All of the, first, open space happened because they saved golf courses. Then they saved San Bruno Mountain. Then they took on.
So what's your point, Madison? The point is not so much.
Well,
the point is not.
Obviously, you don't know what you're talking about.
The '30s, and they're not. They haven't even started till the '70s.
Well, the point is that if people are ripping off land in the '30s, why should we in 2006 allow this to continue? Thanks for your call. So. I mean, that is really an issue that I've been bringing up occasionally. Even occasionally, I get old Phil Baer to come in on the air and talk about it. And there's, you know, even, I think there was this summer there was some concern that the boardwalk was trying to stop access to the trestle, or some such thing, or the walk between the boardwalk and the road above the boardwalk.
Yeah, they actually did block it for a while because under the Coastal Act, they're not supposed to impede people's access to the beach. And they were trying to claim that, oh, well, people can walk down, you know, to our main entrance and come through that way to get to the beach. They don't have to come through this sideway near the trestle. And then also the next entrance up from there, which is by the Giant Dipper roller coaster. They didn't want people going through there either. And it actually went to the Coastal Commission. The Coastal Commission said, no, you are wrong, Charlie. You've got to let people go through there.
Charlie,
you
know, Canfield, the Seaside Company owner.
I mean, it's just like, you know, what happened in Malibu with, who was it, Steven Spielberg or somebody, where he didn't, you know, he bought a piece of property which had a public access right going through it, and he closed it down for 7 years, and it took 7 years of going through court until he finally lost. And
hopefully people continue to move across his property anyway. In spite
well,
of
yeah, it was because it was going through the courts. It was going back and forth. You know, 1 month it would be open, the next month it would be closed. 1 month it would be open. You know, so like 1 month he could call the cops on people. The next month people could call the cops on him. You know, it was just like, it's crazy.
Well, it's interesting. The Seaside Company, of course, has a massive security force. I think one time it was PSI, and sometimes it was First Alarm. These
private security
goon squads that march around.
Charlie owns First Alarm.
Really?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because I know that, what was his name, Mr. Fidget, who had a big case in the late 90s around.
Mr. Widget.
Widget, thank you.
The widget master.
I would fidget as he did his widgets. He got his name from these little kind of interesting devices you would play with little metal kind of Chinese puzzle-like things. But he was arrested on the boardwalk, and I guess there's one small, tiny piece of public property. And I mean, some claim, of course, as you say, it's all public property. The Canfield has stolen all this, or his ancestors have stolen all this.
Right, yes.
You know, but in fact, there is still a square of public property where you can go and set up a table, and the goon squad
in front of the casino.
Right, and you can do it there. I think we did it once when the police chief had a meeting in 1991, and we went there and set up our table, and they ignored us. Then we went into the police chief, and he didn't like it. But that was in the old days.
Who was the chief then?
Bassett, uh-huh. Chief Bassett, Jack Bassett.
Yeah,
it was about homelessness, and we were concerned that he was, shall we say, misleading the public, as is often done by public officials of that kind. Anyway, I mentioned the boardwalk because it's an important public resource. Whenever you hear people wailing and in city council about not having revenue, it seems obvious if the city operated this carnival, it might make a lot of money off of it. So why not simply confiscate the carnival and run it as a city enterprise, maybe a green city enterprise? What do you think, Scott?
Well, the whole thing is that the way it was described to me at one time by somebody was that in Monterey and Carmel, they get the long-sleeve Chardonnay-drinking tourist. And up here in Santa Cruz, we get the short-sleeved beer-drinking tourist. And because of that, we get these tourists that hardly spend any money and just trash our town for the day and are gone.
We have a caller, I believe. Hi there. You're on Free Radio with Scott and Robert. Hello? Are you there? Can you hear me? I don't know if you can or can't because I can't hear you. Try again at 427-3772, the other line, 427-3772. It must be said that of all the places in Santa Cruz, the boardwalk is the most multicultural. I mean, you got the most highest percentage of poorer people, blacker people, browner people, families who are, you know, admittedly from out of town, But, you know, often low-income families or, you know, lower-middle-class families coming to, you know. And to me, I mean, it's in a way, it's healthier than walking around on the West Side where all you see are, you know, I don't know, upper-middle-class honky families who are pretty much, you know.
Okay, but still they're just giving their money to the man.
They're trying to amuse themselves before going back into the slave wage market, you know, the wage slavery scene. That's the deal.
Yeah, and just think of, you know, like, who is one of the big people saying no on Measure G?
Tell me.
Charlie Canfield.
Well, I'm not defending Charlie Canfield. I'm defending the population that visits the Seaside Company. No, I'm not really defending their choices. I'm saying that if you want to meet a mixed group of people, that's a place to go.
Well, yeah, so what? You know, I mean, it's like, you know, you can do the same thing at the university.
Less so. It's pretty wide.
Okay. Well, yeah, you're not going to get the families, but, you know, unless you go there on family day. But
well, you know,
or graduation, you know, but still I would say let's get rid of the damn boardwalk. Charlie, every time the city does something he doesn't like, he says he's going to move the boardwalk to San Diego. Let him do it.
Well, that
we don't need that piece of crap in our town. That's the nicest beach in town. Let's get that friggin' carny off of our beach and do something with it that can actually generate money. Because right now, the city of Santa Cruz spends more money supporting the boardwalk and all the stuff that, you know, traffic problems that it causes, the police and fire protection, ambulance, all this kind of crap that has to happen to make the boardwalk work. We're spending more money doing that than the city's taking in taxes on the boardwalk.
Well, I'm sure.
So it's a losing deal for the city.
I'm sure the city would disagree with you because every year the CVC, which is largely concerned with advertising for the boardwalk, but also advertises for other groups, what's called the
Convention and Visitors
Center.
Yeah. Who else do they have?
It's
you ever seen
$400,000 a year? The city
yeah,
council.
Yeah. Who have you ever seen them advertise for, Robert?
I don't. I've never actually seen their ads, so can't really tell.
Yeah.
You.
If you go to Sacramento and watch TV, there's only one place that advertises.
Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk.
Yeah.
Where everybody
yeah.
has a good
and,
time.
Oh yeah, Roaring Camp does too, but Charlie owns part of Roaring Camp.
I see.
You know, so it's like, you know.
But what now? Let's talk about an issue in town that is on the ballot. We're not going to have time to get through this entire ballot, and I hope
okay,
you come
let's
back.
Let's go to the city ones.
Let's
okay.
go to the city issues, but
okay,
particularly
G.
Measure G. First of all, tell us what Measure G is.
Measure G is that the city of Santa Cruz, all businesses in the city of Santa Cruz will be required to pay a minimum wage of $9.25 an hour. Starting pay.
Right. Now, this would be up from, what, $7.50 an hour now, or?
Well, right now the state minimum wage is $6.75, but in January it's going up to seven something.
$7.50 maybe.
Maybe $7.50 something like that, and then a year later it'll go up to $8.25
something like that.
Yeah, so you know the state's minimum wage—that's a concession already made just before the elections to make him look like he was a man of the people.
Right. Now, he also, the state minimum wage is not cost of living index, but the city's is, right? That's my understanding.
I'm not sure about it. Because the sample ballot doesn't contain the city's stuff, and so far I haven't gotten the text of the city's ballot measures yet, so.
Well, I'm going to go online to the actual text of it. Why don't you talk about this measure, I'll be the devil's advocate. I'm going to throw out some arguments to you that you hear around town as to why people should vote against Measure G.
Well, one of the main reasons to vote in favor of it is because this is one of the most expensive places in the world to live.
Yeah.
Well, come on, Mr. Devil, let's hear your rebuttal to that.
Well, the claim of the merchants that I've read and some is that this would actually cut back on the number of jobs possible that people who are making wages at these restaurants downtown are hired But the operating budget on which they're hired is so constricted that if this measure passes, there will have to be massive cutbacks. There will have to be raises in the prices of goods, for example, connected with goods in the communities nearby, so people could go and get cheaper food in restaurants in the area elsewhere because the wages would be less. In fact, if you went to Taiwan, you could probably buy a real cheap
meal.
You
could buy a whole restaurant.
You could, indeed, and probably a number of sexual servants to go with it, if you'll forgive me for saying so.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, okay. Now, the real issue here is, Robert, the fine line that they're talking about is, will this make it so they won't be able to afford their membership at Pasatiempo this year? You know, is that the problem? Is that these business owners won't be able to belong to the country club because they're going to have to pay their workers a fair wage, or they won't be able to get that new yacht or pay the rent on the berth on their current yacht at the yacht harbor?
Are you claiming that, let's say, virtually all the people who own restaurants downtown, Zachary's, for example, opposes Measure G, doesn't have a sign in the window, but if you talk to the employees, you find that the owners oppose Measure G, and some of the employees do too, or there's a dispute there at least. I mean, are you claiming that every business owned downtown is owned by wealthy people who have yachts in the harbor?
Well, I know that the guy that owns Zachary's has gotten wealthy off it, just like the two guys that own the bagelry have gotten wealthy off of it. The woman that owns the coffee roasting company has gotten wealthy off of it. You know, the people that own Clouds have gotten wealthy from it. The guy that owns Whiting's Food on the boardwalk has gotten wealthy from it. The Marini's Chocolates and Fine
was wealthy to start with.
Yeah, but he got even wealthier from his rotting kid's teeth.
You're repeating the same thing emphatically. Are you actually have personal knowledge of these people? Have you looked?
No,
at
all these people that I just mentioned are wealthy.
And you know this because?
Because I know who they are, and I know I've broken into their computers and read their tax returns.
I see. Well, if you want to trust my guest, scope it out, Scott Graham, you will believe that all the people who are opposing Measure G, allegedly on behalf of their workers, because they're saying we would have to fire some workers, I believe Neil Coonerty, now our supervisor, or soon to be our supervisor-elect, and the owner of the bookshop Santa Cruz, has also said that they provide health benefits, they provide different kinds of benefits for their workers that they could not provide if they had to provide a higher wage. And if they had to provide a higher wage as the minimum wage, they would also have to provide a higher wage for those people in a higher wage category because they would go elsewhere to look for work. I'm not quite sure what the reasoning is here, mind you, but that's the claim, is that there would have to be a rise in the wage scale generally.
Well, I mean, okay, these are all straw man arguments, because if you look at places like Europe, where if you have a job, you have health care. It doesn't matter if you're a part-time worker or a full-time worker, you have health care. The problem in this country isn't that places don't give you health care. The problem is that the health care industry has such a strong lobby, and the insurance industry has such a strong lobby, that they prevent a national health care sort of thing happening in this country like happens in every country in Europe. And until that happens here, like a country like Germany, say, which has a different sort of system than, say, Canada. Canada has a totally nationalized system. Germany is a public-private. You can, if you have a good job, you can have your own private insurance. But if you don't have it, or if you have a low-paying job...
We don't have it here, though, so let's put that aside. So,
that's what I'm saying, is that this is a strongman argument, because the reality is this is an issue beyond Santa Cruz. It's not an issue, that Neil Coonerty, well, it's nice of him to do that for his workers, But the whole thing is, okay, let's say that every restaurant has to fire a third or a quarter of their staff. Every business downtown has to fire a quarter or a third of their staff. All of a sudden, the service in those places will become so pitiful they'll all go out of business. So either pay up or go out of business. That's their real choice here.
Well, they're, of course, the people like the owner of the Pacific Cookie Company and the owner of
Goodwill. Who's also wealthy.
And also owns Goodwill Industries, I believe.
No, he doesn't own Goodwill Industries.
He's on the board.
He's on the board of directors.
He's declared
Goodwill.
He will try to move it out of the city in order to pay his workers less wages. If this
Okay, Goodwill Industry employs unemployable people. And as such, they want an exemption from this law because they're saying, well, you know, we're employing the handicapped or people that are, you know, have no or very little skill, limited skills, and all we have them doing is sorting clothes or whatnot, and so we shouldn't have to pay them. Well, you know, those people, if they're going to live independently, they have to pay rent. They have to do all these things that, like, skilled and, you know, more together people have to do. So why not pay them this wage also, you know?
Now, I understand there's only one business in town, maybe two if you count Alfresco's, that supports Measure G, and that's the Saturn Cafe. Do you know of any others who have support Measure G openly or even or covertly?
No, I don't know of any other business in town that has come out in support of Measure G. I think they're all opposed to it. I hope that it's a slam dunk. I hope Measure G passes, you know, 90% to 10%, which is the 10% would be the business owners. You know, and there's a talk about voter fraud. A lot of these business owners don't live within the city, but they register to vote at their business instead of at the house they live at. Sort of like Michael Hernandez when he got elected to the city council and actually lived in his house in Live Oak instead of his house in the city, but he was registered to vote at his house in the city.
It's actually legal to register to vote at a place you aren't actually living at, provided you don't have a second residence and register there.
No, you are supposed you're supposed to register at your domicile.
Well, you can keep your residence even if you move around the country, provided you don't change it.
No.
If you have an intention of returning to that place, you can.
No.
I speak from experience, believe me. I speak from having consulted an attorney on this issue.
You cannot. If you have a residence.
Well, let's disagree on it.
You cannot register at your business so that you can vote in the elections in the place where you do business instead of voting in the place where you live.
If you claim now to reside at your business, you can.
But if you, in fact, reside at your domicile, you are breaking the law.
No,
yes.
I don't think so. But in any case, regardless of that, because it still obviously looks very opportunistic one way or the other, however you interpret it, I'm looking at the actual Measure G City of Santa Cruz website description of it. It does indeed indicate that this is indexed for annual minimum wage increases determined by reference to the Bay Area Urban Wage Earners and Clerical Workers Consumer Price Index. Small businesses which employ 10 or fewer employees and nonprofit corporations would initially be required to pay a minimum wage of $8 per hour beginning on January 1st, 2008. They'll be required to pay the same minimum wage as other employers. Employees entitled to the minimum wage called for by the ordinance would include all persons who, for an employer, perform at least 2 hours of work a week in the city of Santa Cruz. Employers will be required to pay the minimum wage called for beginning January 1st, 2007. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. We're talking about the minimum wage with Scott Graham.
Yeah, it's Madison. I have a landscape design company, and I told the contractors I work with everybody, they get 14.
Slow down. You have a company where you employ people?
We support Measure G, but we're already paying people 14 to 20 an hour.
So you support Measure G?
Yeah. But so, what I was wondering, what's going on at Vets Hall? You were going to go over that.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks.
You know, I don't have anything new on the Vets Hall about the issue of what's going on with the leadership there. There's some concern with Bruce Bratton, the manager of the Vets Hall. Scott, do you have anything new on what's happening?
Bruce Bratton is the manager of the Vets
Hall?
Sorry,
not Tim Bratton, actually. his illegitimate brother. Bruce is the columnist. My apologies, Bruce. It's not you I'm talking about. It's Tim.
No, I thought you were looking up something about some election fraud deal going on at the Vets Hall tonight, possibly.
Oh, right you are.
Thank you
for putting me back on track here. You know, my problem...
Sidetrack Bob.
Yes. You know, my problem is I don't know the name of this event, but it did start, I believe, at 7 o'clock at the Vets Hall. It has to do with election fraud. It's a movie, I believe, which is a $5 film And maybe even less if you can't afford it. And I don't...
And if you get there late because Robert won't tell you what time it's going, well, maybe you don't have to pay for it at all.
You're
going to
get there late. You'll probably miss it. But I think there's going to be a discussion afterward. And would that there were actually something in the studio. Let me double-check my extensive notes on this issue to see if I can find anything about this. Let's see here.
You want to keep on talking about Measure G, or you want to move on to Measure H?
Well, let's talk a little bit more about Measure G, but... if you want, you can talk about Measure H while I'm scanning this. But
Measure H is a 1/4% sales tax to the city of Santa Cruz. It was originally approved in 2004 for a 5-year period, and the city council, this is once again this drunk sailor routine, doesn't want to go back to the ship and sober up. They say, well, why don't you make this loan to us permanent, this 1/4% sales tax, and that will solve all of our problems. Well, folks, let's let these drunken sailors sober up. Let's not give them their 1/4% in perpetuity. You know, it's bad enough that, you know, you all got suckered into doing it for 5 years. Don't get suckered into doing it forever. So I would say no on Measure H.
Again, how much money are we talking about?
1/4% sales tax.
Which of course is a regressive tax, because it impacts both the poor and the rich equally. So
no, it doesn't. It impacts the poor people more.
Right.
If all you have is a hundred bucks to spend in one week.
Hold it. You're right. What I meant to say was it's the same amount for rich and poor, so it impacts them disproportionately because money means more to poor people than to rich people. Go ahead.
As a percentage of what you have to spend,
correct,
it's taking more of that if you're poor.
So would you favor, let's say, a more progressive kind of local tax, like an income tax or a
transfer
tax?
No, I would say let these friggin' idiots sober up, and let's stop funding all these foolish little projects they're doing all the time.
You mean like the Halloween safety project?
Yeah, I mean, how much did that damn helicopter cost? You know, how much are we going to have to pay the highway patrol to buzz all the neighbors downtown with that damn helicopter all night? That was ridiculous. You know, then we got this stupid art center that they're paying $5 million for some toxic land.
The tannery you're talking
about. Yeah, which is going to end up being a low-income housing project, because as soon as they take a dime from HUD, they no longer can control who goes there. Once you take some money from HUD, then anybody from anywhere in the 50 states, Puerto Rico, Samoa, some of the Virgin Islands, can all come here, sign up for it. And
are you saying that millions of homeless people will flock to Santa Cruz as Mike Rutkin
appears? No, what I'm saying is that it's unlike the promises they made to the artist community, the lying sacks of shit that the city council are. Didn't tell them that as soon as they take the HUD money, they lose control and they can't guarantee one space to one Santa Cruz artist in that whole development.
Hi there, caller. You are again on Free Radio.
Hi, it's Madison. I'm the one who came up with merging low-income housing and artists. That was my original concept way back when we got interviewed, not Kirby.
So what?
And it's not costing the city a dime. Sal's family donated a big portion of it. It's all done on federal money. If we didn't do it with the money that was available, it would have been lost. So why not make a dent?
Scott, your response to her claim there?
There's been budget amendments over the last 3 years, sometimes $90,000, sometimes $150,000, sometimes $200,000, sometimes $75,000. Numerous budget amendments to fund studies, surveys, all these different things to do with this project. The city is on the hook for the entire amount, except for the amount they're getting from HUD.
We are paying
for that land. We're paying over $5 million for a toxic waste dump.
No. Madison, your response?
I believe the land was $2 million, and the South family in the disclosure cleaned it before the city bought it. They paid $1 million for the cleanup. You need to go and do the research.
No,
on that.
They've been let off the hook for the cleanup. The state is going to do the cleanup instead of the Lenzen family who polluted the property. The
right.
state is going to do the cleanup, which means the taxpayers of California are paying for it.
Well,
instead
you
of
want
the,
to go
instead
in the
of
river
the polluters
and pollute more of the fish that we don't have. And the next, on the other level, the arts, every dollar you spend on the arts turns $30 back to the local community.
There are not going to be any artists living there, dear.
Yes, there are.
No, HUD will determine who lives there.
They've already taken the name. They already have a list.
No, no, no. You have been deceived, my dear.
We'll see when that comes. And if it's not, then we'll just go back and tell people, look, it's an art center.
Shades of Dolphin Lee. Yeah.
It's for the homeless. Hey, so what? So if someone moves in and learns how to be an artist, that's what it's for.
Thank you, ma'am.
And also on the Halloween thing,
yes,
I've been talking to everybody on the Art Council plus San Francisco because I'm the kid in Golden Gate Park who started Flower Power.
Yes.
I'm the top, one of
yeah,
the top arts
it.
Planners. Listen, I'm one of the top arts planners on the planet, okay? And you ask anybody, they'll tell you.
What's your point,
Madison? Stuff.
What's your point, Madison?
Well, what I think we should do is just let Burning Man's ticket is $200. And I think that the creativity of the town, the beautiful costumes that I see, the art, the spending, the theater, our symphony is almost broke.
Madison,
what
this
I
is,
told
this is
Rockin
a...
is take this Halloween event,
yes,
give it to the symphony, let them manage charge to get in. Is that gang member going to pay $25 to come in? Probably not.
Okay, well,
probably not.
Thank you, Madison. A symphony on Halloween as an alternate celebration, Scott, your view?
Oh, yes, that'll go over like a Led Zeppelin.
Indeed. Okay, anyone who wants to talk about the two key measures on the ballot, as far as I'm concerned, are measures G and K. Scott, you were talking about measure H, I believe?
Yes, the drunken sailor measure. Let's let
the sales tax.
The drunken sailors stay out there at the bars getting drunk with our money. No, don't let them do that. Let them go back to the ship and sober up.
And then
measure I.
Go ahead. Which is?
Okay, measure I and J are kind of go together. They're the ones that are going to restrict the university. The university tried to sue the city to get it into prevent them from being on the ballot while they're still on the ballot. So I guess the lawsuits are going to happen after the vote. If the voters vote to restrict the university's access to our infrastructure, that's basically what it's going to do. It's going to put limits on the amount of water that they can take from the city. It'll put restrictions on the amount of sewage they can dump into the sewage treatment plant and stuff like that. It'll force them to do something about the roads, the problems with getting in and out of campus.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. So, and then we've got Measure K. Which
so you say yes on I and J.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I think, you know, people all say, oh, yeah, well, if we reelect Rockin, he'll be able to deal with the university. He's been on the city council for 20 years. He has yet to deal with the university. What he has done is collected a paycheck from them every 2 weeks, but others, as far as restricting them, he hasn't done a damn thing.
Actually, 30 years he's been on the council, or 25 years, 26, 27 years, actually. And the final measure is Measure K, is that
measure
right?
Measure K, Special K.
Special K.
But anyway, Measure K is the making marijuana...
private marijuana use for
private
adults.
Private marijuana use for adults, the lowest police priority, and codifying it. Because back when Crone and Sugar were on the city council, they actually made sort of a recommendation to the city council, I mean to the police, that they make it the lowest priority. But the police didn't listen to them. You know, if there was like some hippie with a roach downtown, then all of a sudden there's 80 cops around the guy, you know. So it's like, it's a big waste of time and money for them to enforce the marijuana laws. Let's go after something else, you know. Let's how about we, you know, get rid of the gang violence in this town instead of the people that are getting high on pot.
Well, let me be a devil's advocate here. This prohibits the sales of marijuana. It prohibits the use of marijuana on private property by adults. But this means
it prohibits.
I'm sorry. It prohibits police enforcement. It doesn't prohibit. It makes it the lowest enforcement priority for the police.
Right.
Now, this means, according to some upset merchants or some opponents of this measure, that you can be engaged in marijuana activity on private property. I think it also has to do with sales, does it not? As well as possession.
As long as it's all amongst adults.
Right. Well, that means you can take your marijuana baggies and sell them in the private parking lots right on Pacific Avenue with young children walking by. Now, surely you don't support that, Scott Gray.
Where is the private property on Pacific Avenue? I forgot where that was.
Well, let's say Keontae's parking lot, the parking lot that's right next to Keontae's.
The only person that's private for is the owner of the parking lot. It's not the general public doesn't have a right to claim that as private property for their own personal use.
Well, but Keontae is, let's say, a member of Keontae. I see. So you're claiming that a person could not rush onto that property, that dealers could not go there and deal just for
no,
the heck of it.
No. It has to be on their property, or property that they're leasing or renting.
Or that they have permission to be on.
Yeah, or that they have permission from the owners to be on.
Well, there was a rather shrewd argument against this made in the Sunday Sentinel. You may have seen it last Sunday.
No, I don't read that.
The Urinal, as we call it. But
yeah.
The Sunday Urinal had an argument by, I think, a former police officer, Steve Smith, that claimed that this was a disguised...
Probably an alias.
Attempt to... No, there is a Steve Smith. I've met him at city council. At least he calls himself Steve Smith. He was an opponent of any changes in the sleeping ban, as I remember back in 1999 and 2000. But he claims, if this is the same Steve Smith, that legalizing marijuana may be a good thing. Indeed, alcohol is a much greater problem in many ways. But that we should actually have that discussion without pretending that we are actually not legalizing it when we are. Because he claims that this is a sort of a stealth measure that attempts to legalize it sort of through the back door. Your response?
No, it doesn't. This is a... Basically, this becomes a property rights issue. It's basically clarifying that what somebody does on their own property... They have a right to privacy, and whether there's a, you know, like if you're out in your backyard smoking a doobie and the cops walk by and can smell it, they don't have the right to kick down your gate and come back there and arrest you. You know, it's a private property. So this isn't an issue of we're going to legalize this. We're not legalizing it. We're making it that if you're doing it on your own property or on the property of a friend or what with permission, if you're, you know, it's a basically saying it's okay to you actually have the right to privacy guaranteed under the Constitution.
Illegal production of marijuana leads to a high level of systematic violence. Are we going to encourage these gangs to grow marijuana in the hills and then spread violence and tumult throughout our streets? You've already told us you oppose gang violence, Scott
Graham.
Well,
the whole thing is the hills aren't part of the city of Santa Cruz. They're part of the county. And so unless the county follows suit and does the same sort of thing, that doesn't really apply here.
Fine. Well, what about this? According to the Santa Cruz Police Department's own statistics, in 2005, only 254 citations were issued for possession of less than an ounce of marijuana. These citations were not issued in people's homes. They were issued to potheads smoking on street corners or other public places. We regulate the public consumption of alcohol in public places. Should police officers be statutorily prevented from similarly enforcing marijuana use?
That's another straw man argument, because they're talking about, okay, if what they're saying here is that there's 200 and some odd citations issued for less than an ounce of marijuana out in public, the police would still be able to issue those 200 and some citations, because this law only applies to in the privacy of your own home or your friend's home or your friend's backyard. It doesn't talk, there's nothing in the language of this that says once this passes, we can all go downtown and smoke joints on the mall.
Although you could smoke joints on private property on the mall in the absence of the owner's objection.
What private property are you talking about?
Any piece of property which, let's say, a store, a parking lot that's privately owned.
Oh, you mean like...
Chianti's.
Oh, let's say Ron Lau still owned his property.
Right.
You could if Ron said, okay, let's have a big smoke out here... Well, you can
if Ron didn't say anything, if somebody just walked on the property, the police said, you can't be here, you said, why? I was told I could be here. You know, show me that I can't be. I'm protected by Measure K. This is private property. Get off. Show me the owner's concern about this before you come and arrest me.
Well, see, to me, that's not going to work. I mean, the law, I'm fairly sure, says on private property. You know, and because, like, Ron Lau's property used to be, there was a public right-of-way through there, that makes it quasi-public private property. And any parking lot, whether it's a private parking lot or a public parking lot, is quasi-public because you allow the public to bring their cars in there so that they can go to your business. So it's not really, you know, it becomes a gray area, these kind of things.
You know, I understand what the argument you're making. I think even more important is the reality that if I have my little medical marijuana card with me, which I will, and I light up a joint downtown anywhere, publicly or privately, provided we're not in a no-smoking area generally, then that's just tough shit. Frankly, I think we should have a smoke-out downtown in the middle of the streets until these damn drug laws, they stop enforcing them downtown, period. So as far as I'm concerned, you know...
Well, let's have shoot-up heroin day in front of the Palomar.
Well, I think heroin is another issue, but I agree with you that... maybe you don't agree. I think heroin should be decriminalized, too, and treated as a medical problem.
Well, I mean, the big problem we have in this town is that what people are shooting up isn't even heroin. It's just tar opium, and they're, like, cooking it up and shooting it, and the stuff has been trampled on with all this... you know, terrible stuff. It's so far from being pure. And if it was legalized and people could get good, you know, Rolling Stone quality heroin, then they could actually, you know, carry on with their lives and maybe become multimillionaires like Keith and Mick.
Indeed. And indeed, some countries have set up injection rooms, such as Amsterdam and Germany and Switzerland, where people can go with cocaine and heroin and not have to engage in criminal behavior and not have to suffer toxic circumstances, not spread dirty needles. We need that kind of a movement in Santa Cruz instead of, frankly, these tepid measures about the private
right.
use of marijuana.
Well, I mean, one thing we definitely need in this town as far as the hypodermic needle use goes is that if somebody ODs, like say you're, you know, happen to be with somebody that decides to shoot up and they OD, and if you take them to the hospital, you aren't going to get arrested because you brought them to the hospital. The way the law is now, the cops more than likely are going to arrest you if you take your friend to the hospital. You're better off just dumping them off in a park somewhere and letting them die if you're afraid of being arrested.
Have you actually found that as a practice recently from OD? And do you know how many ODs there have been this year in Santa Cruz?
I don't know, but I know that, you know, it's most people that are in those predicaments that are out there in this town that shoot up, you know, their perception of it, whether it's still valid now or not, is that if one of their friends that they're shooting up with ODs, they should run instead of trying to get that person help.
Right. Again, I know that I've interviewed people where that has been a concern some years ago. I just don't know if it's currently the case. I haven't heard any news stories about that. I know that was one concern, I believe, of the Homeless Issues Task Force, one of the recommendations way back in 1999, 2000.
Right. I mean, we still don't have that, you know. I mean, that seems like a very, like, almost, like, no-brainer. Let's not arrest somebody that's trying to help somebody that's ODing.
Well, you know, it seems to me that the number of meaningful measures on this ballot is very limited. If we're looking at the local ballot, again, let's recap. You are suggesting if people are to vote the Graham ticket.
Yes on Measure G.
Yes on G, which is the minimum wage.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No on H.
Which is the sales tax.
You're right. The drunken sailor tax. Measure I and J, yes.
University limits on university expansion are the cost for university expansion.
Right. And... A yes on Measure K.
Which is lowest priority for marijuana enforcement, which Councilmember Rotkin insists is already the case.
I am not. No, I don't believe him.
Why not?
Because Rotkin speaketh with a forked tongue.
Well, you have a prejudice against Rotkin, but let's suppose somebody claimed marijuana enforcement is already the lowest priority. What would you say about that?
The police are, see, part of like your statistics you brought up of like 250 some odd.
54 tickets were issued for public use of pot.
Okay. How many other people had their pot or their pipes confiscated? They didn't even get a ticket. But the cops just took it away from them.
Many, far as I know.
Or how many people were like, you know.
Even with medical marijuana documentation.
Yeah, some people have their stuff confiscated. Even when they show the cops, oh, I've got medical marijuana, the cops still confiscate their weed.
You know, that one of the reasons, I mean, I say, sure, vote yes on K, vote yes on G, you know, vote yes on, I don't know about I and J, sure. I don't know about that half-cent sales tax. I'll have to think about that.
No,
but, you know,
no on
and, you say no on, what is it, no on?
No on H.
No on H.
The drunken
sailor
tax.
But the issue of this whole, the real issue I have for you is how do we change how the police enforce the drug laws? Or has the citizenry any hope, given the likely right-wing drift or march of the city council? I mean, K may well pass. What that does is it'll tell the police, no, 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 and you have to write out forms when you give marijuana tickets, and you should make it the lowest priority. And I believe that's had an impact in Seattle, but it hasn't had an impact in Berkeley. And I'm not convinced it's necessarily had an impact in Oakland. I'm saying still vote for it, but we have to do something more. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Scott.
Hi, Robert, Scott, Bernard.
Hey, Bernard.
Hey, Bernard.
A new voice. Amazing. Go ahead, Bernard.
Robert's groupie didn't call him this time.
Oh, dear.
Hey, you know, I wanted to, you know, support, two things. One on the marijuana. If Rotkin was really, really telling the truth, you know, that it's a lowest priority, why wouldn't he come out and support Measure G as a confirmation?
Because he's lying.
That's what I mean. I'm just throwing you some ammunition.
And that's,
you know.
Measure K, not Measure G, by the way.
I'm sorry, Measure K. Yes, yes. The second thing is about the bonds is not only do we end up paying double for these bonds, but it's the working class that pays most of the taxes. You
right,
know, on these bonds. That's why I rarely ever vote yes on those bonds, even if I like the, you know, what they allegedly are going to do.
Yeah, because the rich people get tax loopholes. They get out of paying their taxes.
Right. I do that all the time for them, unfortunately.
Yes, yeah, Bernard, you're part of the problem, not the solution.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Bernard.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. That's almost it for Bathrop Spears Broadside tonight. I had hoped to play a number of street interviews, but, of course, I was blindsided by our political analyst, Scott Graham. And I appreciate you coming in, Scott.
Well,
I know
I'm glad that you've invited me, Ron.
And I hope you can come back on Sunday for a kind of a brief trip through the field of the minefield of the rest of the propositions, the state propositions. People perhaps will have their scorecards with them. They can take notes.
And we didn't get to the council candidates.
All right, let's do that. We have about 3 or 4 minutes left. The council candidates running are Matthews, Rotkin, Lynn Robinson, Chris Cobb, Bruce Van Allen, and, of course, Simba Kenyatta. Your view?
Well, my view is the first thing I have to remind everybody, there are 3 open seats. You do not have to vote for 3 people. If you only see one good person on that list, only vote for one person. If you only see 2 good people on that list, only vote for 2 people. You do not need to vote for 3 people. It's not mandatory that you do that. That being said, I would recommend that people vote number 1. If they're only going to vote for 1 person, vote for Simba.
That's Simba Kenyatta.
And even though Simba's ran a pretty much stealth campaign, hasn't been out there much. I don't know if he has a campaign manager or what's going on. You know, people have a hard time getting his yard signs, getting any literature from him or anything. Even though that's the case, I would still, you know, rather see him on there than anybody else on that list. The second person I would tell people to vote for would be Chris Cobb, only because I was at a meeting that he was at, and he had some good ideas that are completely different than the, you know, Matthews, Rockin, Kennedy ideas of what should be happening in our city.
In 40 words or less, what any of those ideas?
Well, as far as a third candidate goes, I'm not going to vote for a third person. I'm only voting for two people.
What about Bruce Van Allen, the great environmentalist?
Bruce, I'm sad to say, is in favor of this horrific bike path through our East Side Greenbelt. So anybody that's in favor of that would never get my vote. That's one of the reasons why I support Christopher Cobb. He's against that. He would either do a Frederick Street ramp or a demonstration project to the rail trail instead of a desecration of our East Side Greenbelt.
Scott Graham, thanks for coming into the studio tonight. Any chance of getting you on Sunday?
Possibly.
I'll try.
Thank
you very much. And thanks to all you listeners out there, all three of you, for listening to us tonight.
It was four, but I'm not anymore.
You're here in the studio. You're broadcast. That's our next talk show host, but he's not going to be talking. He's going to be playing music.
Talk show host.
He is, really. He talks great talk, I got to tell you. He's so modest. He's, you know. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and our next host.
Yeah, Robert, I just wanted to know if your guest could give me some advice on which two council members to vote for, although I'm having a little problem.
Hold it. I got to cut you off because I'm leaving, but his suggestion was
whatever.
Cobb and Kenyatta. I'm sorry, caller. We just don't have time. I'm about to be, soundly thrashed by the next host. So,
no, not thrashed, just removed.
Just removed physically, bodily, as perhaps Becky Johnson was prevented from coming into a Free Radio Santa Cruz meeting so long ago. But that's another story.
She wasn't a member of the
club. She won't get into that at this time. She's only been a member for about 8 years. But moving right along, the controversy rages. Thank you for being with me.
You want to print that in capital letters?
Why not?
Why don't you guys wrestle it? I'll let the people on air know what's going on.
Tune in again on Sunday for more of this exciting badinage, 9:30 to 1 o'clock. And if you want to catch this show again, you know, you could be a glutton for punishment. It's www.huffsantacruz.org. Ah, yes, one final announcement. The protest that was slated for the Lulu Carpenters is going to be postponed because of rain, probably for about a week. So if you want to protest the collusion between police and merchants downtown around harassment of poor people, you're going to have to wait or do your own protest or give me a call at 423-HUFF.
Go harass yourself.
Indeed. Harass. Who cares? But in any case, look at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz for more information, provided, of course, it doesn't disappear. We'll have to hope on that issue. Thanks again. Tune in again on Sunday at 9:30.
We don't do this song very much, but I feel like singing, so I guess that's what we're going to do. On your dog. You got
dimples on your jaw. Got dimples on your jaw. Oh, my baby, I got mine. Near me, little girl.
got your motor running. Head out on the high road, looking for adventure. Whatever comes our way, yeah, baby, gonna make you happy. Take the world into love and grow. Fire your guns at once and explode into space. Like a true nature child, we were born to be wild. We gon' climb so high, we're never gonna die. We were born to be wild.